is Digital Marketer. Today, it's Sophia Lopez.
Hello, and welcome to the Digital Marketer Podcast. I'm your host, Jenna Snavely, and today we're continuing our series, Inside the Digital Marketer Offices. I sat down with Sophia Lopez. She's our Director of People and Culture, and we talked about the two most important parts of any business, your people and your culture. I've worked with Sophia a lot personally in the hiring process, and also just anytime I have like a wild idea, I run to her office and I'm like, hey, we should do this. And she's always willing to listen and always willing to advocate for our ideas. And I just thought it would be a really great opportunity to learn a little bit more about what is going on behind the scenes when you're hiring, when you're offboarding employees, something we don't like to talk about, but every business has to do at some point. And in general, why HR is so cool. Whether you're a hiring manager, a founder, or you're a lone HR professional in this world, this one's for you. I think you're going to love this conversation. So much awesome insight into how a business always comes back to your people. Here it is. Cool. Well, I am really excited to talk to you. I kind of just wanted to start with like how you found DM and kind of what your path was to becoming the Director of People and Culture.
I think like a lot of HR professionals, I fell into HR. Initially, my background is in public relations. So went to school, had the audacity to read for 4 years and get an English degree. And afterwards, the question was, what do I do next? And the next transferable skill that made sense was communications. So I decided to go back to school, get a master's. And I was in the process of getting my master's online when I moved to Austin and found Digital Marketer on Craigslist, of all places.
What year was this?
2015. This was one of the last Craigslist posts that was ever made by DM. Like, I've gone back and tried it, and it's not as successful anymore. In LA, our job market was primarily Craigslist postings. Indeed hadn't really caught on yet. LinkedIn was still somewhat new. So when I moved out here, I brought that search expectation with me. And thankfully I did, because found DM through that particular search. And at the time, I had about 3 months worth of savings, and I was at the 2 month mark, and I had gone almost all the way in a Blanton Museum PR interview process. And I was so excited.
Oh.
It was down to me and another candidate, and they picked the other candidate. And I was like, oh my God, I have 1 more month's worth of savings. I have to make that walk of shame back to California. And so I opened up the search pool, started looking outside of PR roles, and started looking at admin assistant roles. That's what I had done through college, had done several years of it, and had the resume for it. And so that's when I found the admin assistant role for DM. And the director of HR at the time, Janice Litchfield, called me, and I was at the state capitol taking a tour. And I was like, I don't know what this is. And I was there with my best friend. And I picked it up. She's like, hey, I'm calling from Digital Marketer. I'm like, oh my God, which one is Digital Marketer? I've applied to so many jobs.
Oh no.
And she gave me a quick overview. Like, we're an e-learning company. I was like, oh, I remember them standing out. They had a really great post. They had a, actually, we kind of had a funky website at the time. And I remembered thinking, is this legit? But really liked the testimonials that I had seen online. And I was like, I'm going to give them a chance. And had a really great interview over the phone. I was like hiding in the state capitol where it was very echoey. And I was trying to be as quiet as possible for other tourists. And ended up getting the job a week later, about 3 weeks away from the end of my savings. And came in, and I had a really cool opportunity with Ryan Dice, our CEO, and Janice. There was a lot of HR need at the time. And there wasn't a communications department at the time either. And they were hiring their director of communications, Christine Haas. And they gave me the opportunity to do some HR duties and some communications duties at the same time and decide for myself. It was like a choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
What do you want to do? And after a couple of months in, Ryan came to me. He's like, so what do you want? And I was like, I want to do HR. And he's like, I didn't see it going that direction. And so I had started doing payroll, had started doing very minor employee relations, but that was my favorite part, and then jumped into recruiting and then benefits administration. 6 months into my, less than 6 months into my tenure with the HR department, we made a huge move from a PEO HR platform called Insperity and jumped to a proprietary software called HRMP, and we had to implement in 30 days. And that meant getting a 401k provider, finding new medical plans, dental plans, vision plans, and make it as seamless as possible so no employee felt anything. So that was my first experience with HR. And it was like, all right, everything's on fire. If we can do this, we can do anything. And that has been the journey since.
Wow.
Not on fire anymore, though, by the way.
Yeah. So when you started, there were how many employees?
Oh, gosh. We must have been at 25 or less, and a good portion was out of the office or remote.
Yeah. Yeah. And so now where are we at?
We are at about 68, 69 employees, so just shy of 70.
That's super cool. So tell me a little bit about what you've seen, some of the growth, not just in numbers, but where we have grown as we have grown.
Yeah, I think we've become, as you kind of have to be, we've become much more intentional about the different processes that we have with regards to people. One of the first things that we started streamlining was how we were hiring people, which I'm so glad that was the focus, because if you're not hiring the right people, you're going to have so many problems and everything else is then a focus, and that shouldn't be the case. And that simply means like employee relations, performance management, everything feels like it's on fire. So hiring the right people was the best place to start, being sure to streamline what is our process there? What are we looking for? What do those questions look like to bring in the best talent? How are we enhancing our culture? Those sorts of questions became the focal point for us. And it shows. It shows in the people we now have on staff and how hard they work and how bought in they are to the mission and our core values. And that's a big success. So that was a definite growing point for us, figuring out what is our recruiting process, what is our onboarding process. Still building out the onboarding process that changes every single day, department to department, but being sure we're staying on top of it. Some other areas we've streamlined and gotten a lot better. More focus on performance management. So looking at what's the point of doing a performance review? Like, they suck. We can all be honest and say it. But we've been very intentional with our questions. We're actually just completing, as you know yourself.
I know. I still
the first full year.
I still have to finish mine.
It's okay. I still have one left too.
It's tough. It's tough. You have to sit. You know what I started doing was I put on a little countdown timer for 2 minutes and 30 seconds. That's and I go to a question and I just bang out the question. Because otherwise what I'll do is I'll just sit there and like read
paralysis.
It.
Paralysis.
Yeah. And I just like, I type here and there and I'll go to the next one. I'll go back up and I'll read. And then I'll be like, oh, I haven't touched this in 30 minutes. Let me go back and reread everything I wrote. So that's how I've been doing it.
Yes. That's fantastic. That's a good process. Doing it, making sure it gets done. So this is our first complete year of committing to a performance review process and testing if it works. We're still deciding if we like it. We want to be sure that we're not just checking boxes. That's what a lot of HR processes become. That's what performance reviews become. Are we checking this box and getting it done? We don't want it to be a time suck for managers, for team members. And then it just loses its value. And you're like, I'm just doing this because I have to, because Sophia's making me do it. We want to be sure it's valuable. And so from the process, one of the big benefits we've seen is we have more people talking about compensation, which is huge. Most people don't feel comfortable talking about money, talking about their worth, being confident knowing what their worth is. And I'm seeing that more and more in this office of team members saying like, hey, I have been doing XYZ. I believe I am entitled to XYZ raise. And they're advocating for themselves. And I love that. Our managers love that. It gets us out of our comfort zone. And it prepares you to also be in the world, because we know not everyone will be here forever. I'd like them to be, but they won't be. And so going out to a new job and being able to know what your worth is so valuable. So if people are learning that through the process, awesome, it did something really great. But also it's helping team members know what are their pain points, where's opportunity for growth, and letting us focus on that. So we're leveraging the best staff that we've got.
Yeah.
So it's been a good process so far. So those two areas have been primarily for me two focuses over the last year, year and a half. We've also started to see more. We have a more diverse workplace. We have a more diverse staff. And so with that comes new challenges, new things that we haven't seen before. And so it's made us more adaptable. We've learned to address problems faster. We've learned to identify the opportunities faster. And it's making us a little faster on our feet, which is always good for everybody.
I love that. Well, let's kind of go back to each of those and kind of dig into them.
Yeah. Because
I want to hear first about the hiring process. Obviously, I mean, I've worked with you a lot on it. I recently, I got to hire two people onto my team, and I love the hiring process. Like, just like every time I finish it, I'm like, and that's why, like, that's why this is awesome. Like, it just feels so good. So tell me a little bit about what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So today, our hiring process is very well mapped out. We've identified every single step in the process. I'm involved at every point. We're small enough where that still makes sense and it still works for us. I recognize that as we get larger, that might not always be the case, but that's where training comes in, being sure our hiring managers understand the full process themselves and they can run it to the best of their abilities. So right now, it always starts with the job posting. So going in, being sure that the job posting reflects who we are. That's a really good filter for the start. If you have team potential candidates, you're like, oh, no, they're like too irreverent. I'm not digging this language, or that just doesn't seem like it would fit me, who I am. That's good. It means it's doing its job. We get to weed through and filter out the individuals who might not like our environment, and that's okay. Not everybody will. But that also means we get the people who are fully bought in from the start. And so those applications come in. I work with the hiring manager to start sifting through those. So we don't rely on an auto-generated applicant tracking system to filter through resumes. A lot of larger companies have to start relying on that because they're getting large volumes of resumes from candidates. Thankfully, we're small enough and we're very dedicated that we can still dedicate time to manually going through each resume. Again, let's see if that scales. For the time being, I do really like that that's our approach. So we go through, we look at every single resume. We start pushing in potential candidates, like, let's phone screen that person. Let's learn a little bit more about their background, their experience. And then the next part of the process is me. I conduct all of our phone interviews, schedule all the time with those candidates that could be a really great team member. And the hiring manager and I will walk through potential interview questions together, see what makes sense based on what the hiring manager is looking for, and I'll screen for those things. And typically it's a confirming that they can actually do the job. That's always number one. Clarifying anything on the resume or application that was a question mark or red flag or just wanted to learn a little bit more about it. And then also always looking at core values fit. So we have our 9 core values here. And then learning why they applied, why our company. It was their buy-in on the mission early on. What are they hoping to learn? How are they hoping to develop? So those are the things I do in the phone screen. From there, I chat with the hiring manager, let them know, like, these candidates are amazing. We're going to go ahead and pass on these candidates. And then start scheduling that first in-round, typically in-office interview. We always accommodate remote or individuals outside of Austin or outside of Texas. We don't let that be a hindering factor, of course. And so in those cases, we do like a Google Hangouts call, a Zoom call. But that next round is face-to-face. There's a lot of value in getting to read the individual's body language, getting to see their expressions, how they communicate, eye contact, all those little tiny subtle cues tell so much more than just their answers. They help supplement those answers. And then from there, it's next round would be typically an interview with the hiring panel. And so the hiring manager picks out 4 team members, ideally from the team and from the department. So you're getting more perspectives on the individual that maybe I or the hiring manager did not see. Or they get to also just dive in a little bit deeper on potential red flags, if there were any. But the goal is to have more perspectives on that individual candidate. So that's our individual contributor process. If we're hiring for a technical or a creative role, someone who's writing, someone who's designing, or someone who will be doing some sort of engineering or dev work, we tend to include an assignment round between the in-person and the panel. And that, again, just money where your mouth is, lets us know you can do the job, you've got the creativity, you can think on your feet, you meet deadlines. It's testing some of those other qualities. in that in-person for sales or customer care, it tends to be a little bit of a role play. So also testing, can you do the job? And then if manager or director level, we tend to add on an additional interview with the director of the department. And if it is a director level higher, then with Richard and Ryan, our president and our CEO. So they fully buy in on the decision as well, because those types of hires, all hires, but especially the leadership coming in, especially from the outside, it's a big change to the environment. Mm-hmm. So got to be sure everyone's bought in. So that's the process to date. So far, it's served us really well.
Yeah, and I think so.
Continue to fine tune it as we need to. Tends to be just little details at this point now. The overall process is pretty solid.
Yeah. Yeah. I personally really love doing it.
And Jenna does it very well. She is one of my favorites to work with. So thank you for doing that with me.
It's just so fun. It's like, oh, this is a different project that I get to work on.
You get to meet so many great people. Learn all about them and also about us and what it is we're looking for. It's a great insider view into what we do.
Yeah. So that's kind of the people part of being the director of people and culture. Tell me a little bit about the culture part.
So when individuals ask about, like, what is it to be the director of people and culture? What is that? What does the culture side mean? A lot of it is initiatives, it's projects, it's collecting feedback from team members, but ultimately it's being an advocate. One person cannot own the culture. That's not possible. So when creating this role, creating this title, there were a lot of conversations with leadership, with Richard, with Ryan, and communicating that particular element of like, hey, like I understand we have titles own things and responsibilities. I wanted to be sure this role doesn't own culture. I can own initiatives behind culture, but I can't own the culture. That's not something one person can do. So it was a very candid conversation of, we're all doing this. And they were, of course, like, yeah, duh, Sophia. We know that. So I like to say, the liaison between team members and company being leadership, the owners, being sure that team members, that feedback is getting where it needs to go, changes are happening. Really see myself as being, I'm actually not a big fan of it. It's such a buzzwordy term, but it kind of applies, a servant leader. You get to serve all the people. You get to serve leadership. You get to serve every team member. Kind of get to be that fun middle piece. So it's a lot of chatting with team members, chatting with leadership, identifying what we call threats and opportunities. Even threats are opportunities. So if individuals don't like that as a negative term, everything's an opportunity. How can we be better? How can
some are just better? Scarier
exactly. than others. The element of fear is just yeah. And how much sweating is happening is the deciding factor between those two. So I like to say that director of people and culture is essentially an advocate. That is the number one thing that I get to own. And I love it. It's the most fun part of the job. It's getting to hear from team members, their ideas and their experiences as a team member on the ground, and hear about things that maybe I don't see every single day, but can change. And that's an exciting feeling behind the work.
Yeah. So when I was first hired, which was almost 3 years ago now, the company was very different. It felt very different. And there's a lot of learning curves that I think we went through in that time. Tell me a little bit about some of our failures and how we came back from them.
I think there are two areas. And they're ongoing. We continue to be better in these areas. They're always a work in progress. The first one that comes to mind is there's an HR practice that is being talked about more and more. Many people listening to this have probably heard it. And it's a position of hire slowly, offboard quickly. And I think for a long time, we did the reverse. In HR, there's so much focus on risk and risk assessment and the possible threats of being sued. And that's a very real environment, a real issue to always be top of mind. And going into HR, as I was learning about employment law and risk and claims and how Sue happy the world is, the focus was like, oh my God, we need to be sure everything is compliant. We need to do everything very thoughtfully. And with that, tended to be very slowly as we kind of assessed every possible outcome, especially around terminations and offboarding. So even to this day, I think we could still be quicker in terms of how we offboard team members. But in the past, we offboarded very slowly. And there is nothing more detrimental to a culture than if you have a team member who is clearly not a fit, they're not performing, but there's also an attitude issue too, and it feels toxic. And that attitude is starting to kind of seep out, and other team members feel it. And then team members wonder, why is nobody doing anything about this? Is this okay? And that starts to instill doubt around leadership's not acting. What's going on? So that is very harmful to a culture. And I've seen that happen to us. I know leadership would be very candid and say like, oh yeah, we've done that. And it was in our efforts to be very cautious around offboarding someone incorrectly or without carefully considering all the possible outcomes in terms of like legal follow-up or legal action. So that is something we're still working on doing very well. And to be more proactive there, that's why we focus so quickly on hiring well. We've gotten really good at hiring slowly because we're finding the right person. We take the time at the start to ensure that the person coming in to fill that role is the right individual. And because of that, it has led to less individuals not being the ideal candidate for that position. So no need to offboard or terminate as often as we did in the earlier days when we were still figuring out, what roles do we even need? Did we need that title? Did it fit who we were, the size of the company, where we were going, the business model? So thankfully, we've gotten really good on that front of hiring the right people, hiring slowly. We can be better in terms of recognizing quickly, like, it's not a fit. And so that's something that was a big learning lesson for us. But it led to us prioritizing hiring well, which is a good thing. Another area where we can still be better, and I know this is common feedback from the team, communication and transparency. We pivot here so quickly. That's what makes digital marketers so magical. We get to explore so many new things, but being sure that team members are aware of what's changing and when, that's very helpful. It's not always realistic to like let the entire team know of all the big changes happening, and we recognize that. I recognize that. But communication in terms of just, if we say we're going to do a quarterly meeting, be sure that we're fulfilling and following up on that. If we say that the meeting structure is changing to monthly, being sure to follow up on that. And whatever other announcements that come with those meetings, that those are happening regularly and on schedule. We've gotten so much better. One of the great things that we've started doing that Ryan has implemented is our internal newsletter of announcements, being sure that people are hearing from him what's happening, what's coming down the pipeline. And I've heard a lot of really great feedback from that. Like, I feel like I know so much more about where we're going.
I love it, honestly. And it feels like there's a level of like attention he's paying to everyone. And it's like, you know, when he's gone and he's traveling, you can sometimes feel like, oh, our leader is gone. Where is he? And then to hear from him during those times, especially, it's kind of like, okay, still good. Like, even if, you know, we've done a really great job, I think, of being able to run the place. Like, I think so. The monkeys are running the zoo over here. But it's still nice to know, like, the attention is still there.
And he's been so great about still keeping that a priority, the consistency behind it, where it's like people expect it on a specific day now. And it's in your inbox when you expect it to be. And it has such good information in it. And it's from him directly. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much value in that. Yeah. And I think team members, I've seen a surge in morale because of it. Like, summertime can be tough for digital marketer. Like, we're an e-learning company. People take the summer to spend away from their learning, to take summer break. And so that does have an impact on us as a business. And so team members are still chugging along, doing their work, doing it well. But then you've also got more people out for summer break, and the office is a little bit different during summer.
Sophia, you know it's November right now, right?
Yes. Yes. Reflecting more on the last quarter.
To be fair, though, it is like 85 degrees in Austin.
This was more of a comment on like still having Ryan's newsletter in your inbox right. when some team members aren't around. Like,
yeah.
That makes such a big difference.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay. It's hard to talk about it, but I feel like we've kind of danced around it more, and people just need to know, like, how do you fire someone? How do you do it?
Oh, there's so much. There are so many blog posts out there, so much literature around best practices for offboarding a team member. I think the number one thing you, being an HR person or a manager, the one thing you can bring to the table is compassion. You can go through all the checklists. You can have a variety of checklists for doing it well. The number one thing is just remember that the person you are offboarding is a person, and the decision you've made it will impact their life for a little while. So be very aware of that. Be compassionate. There's so much language around there. Again, looking at risk assessment. And like when I started in HR, it was like a don't, just a checklist of all the things you don't do. And one of the big things is don't say I'm sorry, because it potentially admits guilt. Of like you're doing it wrong. And I don't agree with it. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying I'm sorry of if and when appropriate, just like patting their hand, giving them a tissue. I do think you kind of start to cross the line if you're saying like, I understand, or I've been there. Those don't do that. Don't put yourself too much in their shoes where it starts to discount the feelings that they're experiencing at that moment. Mm-hmm. You don't know what they're feeling. If you've gone through it yourself, you knew in that moment what they were feeling, but you don't now. Mm-hmm. So don't overshadow the grieving they're going through, because that is what's happening. They're going through grieving at that point. And in that moment, it tends to be shock. So be as compassionate as possible. You're going to likely walk them through the logistics of what does this termination mean? It means, in many cases, you no longer have benefits, or you have benefits through this given period. It means talking about their final paycheck. It means walking through a lot of details that they're not going to remember in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible. They were in a state of shock. So being very compassionate in the moment, letting them grieve it out for a couple of minutes, escorting them out, letting them keep their dignity. That is what your focus is as somebody offboarding an individual. Being sure that it's compassionate and it's letting them still feel like a human. That is all you've got to do. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, it's always good to send a follow-up email, because, again, they're not going to remember the details of what just happened. Mm. Being sure to give them as much information as possible and still lending yourself as a resource as they're transitioning into unemployment or a new role, whatever the case may be for them, just making yourself available to answer questions and to assist as needed and, of course, as is appropriate during that transitionary period. Offboarding's hard. It's the worst part of the job. It's very emotional. For me, I've learned enough about myself. I know I'm an empath, and I have to prepare for offboarding sessions because it drains me very quickly. And so I also have to be very aware of the hiring manager that's doing it too. It very well may drain them. It will impact their day, possibly their week, as they're still fielding questions from the team and adjusting to life without that team member present. So being sure to coach that manager into like, this is the process. I'm also here for you as a manager, because it is a loss. There's a gap once a team member leaves, assuming that was the right decision made, it still impacts everybody. It's like losing a family member in its own way.
Yeah.
So I would say focusing on compassion, being sure that person leaves with their dignity, that also ensures that if you've done it right, that team member is not going to be as disgruntled or come back with some sort of a claim against you, because you didn't hurt them as a human. You just severed the relationship between work and employee. But at a human-to-human level, you didn't ruin that tie. That's the goal.
Yeah. How do you say it and who does it?
So at this point, I like the manager to do it. And the reason being, because once upon a time, we've had multiple entities under our umbrella. And we offboarded a lot of team members in our history. And we never want managers to not fully understand the social responsibility of hiring and firing. So if you want to hire, that's awesome. But there might be a day where you have to fire. So be sure that you're hiring well and that you're not just hiring because you need somebody to do something for 6 months. Like, that's not okay. That's probably a contractor or that's a project. So we've built it in so that the manager does the offboarding so that they know just how serious of an impact it has. It's a terrible thing to say, but it builds your empathy. You have to understand the repercussions of a firing. So, you know, like, I never want to be here again. So if it was a bad hire, I'd say, I never want to be here again. I'm going to focus on hiring well next time. That was kind of where it started. But now it's a, you are the manager. You owned this relationship. You are also sitting here saying, by doing this offboarding, that you've done everything in your power to help train that person up. If it was performance related, have conversations and also try to uplift, direct that person in the right path. If it was other non-performance related things, like maybe attitude or the person just wasn't a fit, sometimes that's really just it. So having the hiring manager deliver the actual news, and typically our process is, it's very quick, and it's quick to kind of let that person walk through the stages of grief as quickly as possible, and then let them get home and finish the grieving. So typically it's a, so-and-so, we wanted to inform you that today is going to be your last day with the company. And then it's a very quick, if 30-second to a minute script of just, these are some of the details of the termination. And then it's a, do you have any questions? Leave it a little bit open-ended for them. Many cases, there aren't questions. It's just, again, shock. And then it's a pass off to me, and I walk through the logistics, and I just sit with the person. And it's typically date of last paycheck, talking about COBRA or continuation of benefits insurance, any information around paying out PTO, some of those employment logistical questions, especially around comp benefits. And then, of course, letting them know next steps. So like, you do or do not qualify for unemployment insurance because of XYZ. If there is some sort of a separation agreement or package in place, giving them the details of that. And then I have the paperwork on hand to just walk them through what each line means. And then I always let them know all of this is going to be shared via email. So I collect signatures and DocuSign. So if they're not in the headspace to sign anything, they want to review some things, being sure to build that in. So letting team members know, like, you're going to get all of this and a summary of it in your email. If you have any questions at all, like, I'm here, your hiring manager's here, and assuming the relationship is ending still on good terms and it wasn't hostile in any way, we're always happy to do a personal recommendation, help them get back on their feet. Our EAP benefits, our employee assistance program benefits, continue for 6 months, and they also help with transitioning somebody into a new role. They're really great with resume review if that service is needed. So there are resources that continue on with the employee. Which is nice. It's nice to know you have somewhere to go.
Man. Well, that sounds great. I hope I never have to see it. But at the same time, like, you know, how do you, when, if they have just a lot of questions about, like, why, and how do you answer those?
Typically, answers there tend to be vague. If it's performance related, they've already been coached. They've been on plans up to that point. So it's a,
It should never be a surprise.
It really shouldn't. It's just a reminder of a, like, hey, we've been on this plan. We still haven't met those metrics, or we're not where we asked. You're not yet where we asked you to be, et cetera. Kind of walking through whatever has already been outlined previously and leaving it at that. We don't dive into too much additional detail just because the emotional stakes can be high and words can be turned against you at any time. So again, compassion, dignity, but still always assessing risk and trying to keep it to as few words as possible. But you also don't want the person to ever feel like you're not there to listen or answer questions. So that's why we still keep the question in there, recognizing it could very well open a can of worms.
Yeah.
In most cases, it doesn't, because the team member is very well aware of why we're in that meeting.
Hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some happy things.
All right. I'm all for that.
What are some of the, like, programs and things that you've brought to the table that you think have really impacted our culture and employee happiness?
Yes. So this is something, it's not, this is in no way just a me thing, but it is an area where I'm very proud. Our benefits are fantastic. We're not up there with the Googles and the Facebooks, but for a company of our size, we do pretty well. And for team members that don't know, we achieve for the second year in a row what is called Rate Pass. So every single year, the carriers being like United Healthcare, Sun Life, the companies that oversee our different benefit types, they evaluate what does utilization look like in the last year. And assuming utilization is low, they come back and tell you, all right, based on where you are, because we do renewal every single year. So they come back and they say, we're going to increase your benefits by X percentage. And typically, industry standard has seen increases of 10 to 15%, which is it's a lot of money. But for the last couple of years, we've been pretty low. We've been in like the 5 to 7% range. But 2 years ago, they came back and they're like, we're not increasing you by any percentage. 0% for y'all, because our utilization was so low. And utilization was so low because team members are using Teladoc, the EAP. It's keeping the costs of United Healthcare down, which means that come a year later, they're like, you haven't cost us a lot of money, so we're not going to charge you more money for next year. So the strategy there is very intentional. A lot of team members don't know that that's happening in the background. That push, like, use Teladoc, use your EAP. They're great benefits to start, but it's also very strategic of if you use those, you're also helping yourself later, because the increase doesn't happen, because that increase is then spread out between employer and employee. So that's why our medical only increased by $2 this year, because there was nothing there. It was fantastic. So it's been 2 years in a row. That is basically unheard of. And something we're very proud of, my new catchphrase in HR is Rate Pass. And I like walk up and down the hall yelling it. And accounting knows what it means, but most team members don't.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's so many parts of this that, man, I just had no idea what's happening in the background.
It's very exciting. So when it comes to wellness initiatives and like the step challenges that we've put in place, they're all really great for morale. They're great for team building. They're good for just general well-being. But they're also fantastic as an overall benefits cost strategy. United Healthcare, Sun Life, mostly United Healthcare, they love to see companies that are proactively looking at preventative measures. So if like we're having team members go out, they're walking, they're keeping their blood flow pumping, they're doing healthy exercise, that in theory means less or lower chances of illness, disease, any sort of specifically critical illness and things, which means they don't have to fork over the money to help pay for all of that. So they're a little more lenient in terms of, we're not going to increase anything for y'all regarding premiums. So it all serves a purpose. So wellness is huge. That's the ROI on wellness. Lots of people ask, like, is it helpful though? Like, how is it helpful? In this case, like a 10% increase for our benefits, you're looking at anywhere between $20,000 and $40,000, I think, in a year.
Whoa.
That's the ROI right there. Like, you want to see dollars? There they are. So focusing on those things and being sure that our wellness initiatives are creative, they're happening, that's why we do it. We do it for many reasons, but big one is keeping costs down for team members too. So it's a different win-win, looking at your health, but also looking at your bank accounts, being sure that your bank accounts are healthy too.
That is important.
Yes.
Health is wealth and wealth is health.
Yes, there you go. Interchangeable.
Yeah.
You heard it here.
Well, Sophia, before we wrap up, is there any like final tidbit you'd like to send out love to any, you know, lone HR professionals or even business owners who are kind of their own HR professionals?
Oh, yeah. There are so many HR departments of one out there. Mm-hmm. And so kudos to all of you for getting it done, for caring for your people, and for balancing leadership and team member. and making sure different voices are heard, my advice would be continue to be that advocate. It gets hard, especially if you feel like you're hitting a wall or the priority doesn't seem to be people. Your priority is always people as an HR person. Like, that's your number one job. That is your job in a nutshell. And sometimes the focus becomes, goodness, it can become revenue. It can become customers. But you are the person that gets to say, our people are important. Like, we need to be sure that they are top of mind all the time. And again, that can be very difficult depending on your season as a business. But don't stop pushing. It's so valued by your people. It's valued by your leadership. You are the heart and soul of the business. So don't forget that. Let that be your encouragement as you do what you do every single day.
Beautiful. Where can people find out more about you or connect with you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You will definitely have to search Sophia Lopez Digital Marketer because there are so many Sophia Lopez's on LinkedIn, as I've so learned. And then if ever you want to reach out, learn a little bit more, or are just interested in potentially being a team member, feel free to reach me at Sophia, S-O-P-H-I-A, at digitalmarketer.com.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jenna. It was so nice to be on the podcast.
Yeah, it was fun to have you.
All right.
Bye. Take care. And to everyone out there, we'll see you same time, same place next week. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Goodbye.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up, because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials and three unique design themes for each holiday. The Promo Pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.